Chapter 149. The turbid river held its swift course undisturbed, between two brawling streams of life and motion. A troubled vision, then, of bridges, quays, interminable streets, of wine shops, water carriers, great crowds of people, soldiers, coaches, military drums, arcades, of the monotony of bells and wheels, and horses' feet being at length lost in the universal din and uproar, of the gradual subsidence of that noise as he passed out in another carriage by a different barrier from that by which he had entered, of the restoration, as he travelled on towards the sea coast, of the monotony of bells and wheels, and horses' feet, and no rest, of sunset once again, and nightfall, of long roads again, and dead of night, and feeble lights in windows by the roadside, and still the old monotony of bells and wheels, and horses' feet, and no rest, of dawn, and daybreak, and the rising of the sun, of tolling slowly up a hill, and feeling on its top the fresh sea breeze, and seeing the morning light upon the edges of the distant waves, of coming down into a harbor, when the tide was at its full, and seeing fishing boats float on, and glad women and children waiting for them, of nets and seamen's clothes spread out to dry upon the shore, of busy sailors, and their voices high among ships' masts and rigging, of the buoyancy and brightness of the water, and the universal sparkling, of receding from the coast, and looking back upon it from the deck, when it was a haze upon the water, with here and there a little opening of bright land where the sun struck, of the swell, and flash, and murmur of the calm sea, of another gray line on the ocean, on the vessel's track, fast growing clearer and higher, of cliffs and buildings, and a windmill, and a church, becoming more and more visible upon it, of steaming on at last into smooth water, and mooring to a pier, whence groups of people looked down, greeting friends on board, of disembarking, passing among them quickly, shunning every one, and of being at last again in England. He had thought, in his dream, of going down into a remote country place he knew, and lying quiet there, while he secretly informed himself of what transpired, and determined how to act. Still in the same stunned condition, he remembered a certain station on the railway, where he would have to branch off to his place of destination, and where there was a quiet inn. Here, he indistinctly resolved to tarry and rest. With this purpose he slunk into a railway carriage as quickly as he could, and lying there wrapped in his cloak, as if he were asleep, was soon borne far away from the sea, and deep into the inland green. Arrived at his destination he looked out, and surveyed it carefully. He was not mistaken in his impression of the place. It was a retired spot, on the borders of a little wood. Only one house, newly built or altered for the purpose, stood there, surrounded by its neat garden. The small town that was nearest was some miles away. Here he alighted then, and going straight into the tavern, unobserved by anyone, secured two rooms upstairs communicating with each other, and sufficiently retired. His object was to rest, and recover the command of himself, and the balance of his mind. Imbecile discomfiture and rage so that, as he walked about his room, he ground his teeth had complete possession of him. His thoughts, not to be stopped or directed, still wandered where they would, and dragged him after them. He was stupefied, and he was wearied to death. But, as if there were a curse upon him, that he should never rest again, his drowsy senses would not lose their consciousness. He had no more influence with them, in this regard, than if they had been another man's. It was not that they forced him to take note of present sounds and objects, but that they would not be diverted from the whole hurried vision of his journey. It was constantly before him all at once. She stood there, with her dark disdainful eyes again upon him, and he was riding on nevertheless, through town and country, light and darkness, wet weather and dry, over road and pavement, hill and valley, height and hollow, jaded and scared by the monotony of bells and wheels, and horses' feet, and no rest. What day is this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he asked of the waiter, who was making preparations for his dinner. day, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, is it Wednesday? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Wednesday, sir? No, sir. Thursday, sir. Apostrophe, I forgot. How goes the time? My watch is unwound. Apostrophe, wants a few minutes of 5 o'clock, sir. Been traveling a long time, sir, perhaps? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, by rail, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, very confusing, sir. Not much in the habit of traveling by rail myself, sir, but gentlemen frequently say so. Apostrophe, do many gentlemen come here? Pretty well, sir, in general. Nobody here at present. Rather slack just now, sir. Everything is slack, sir. Apostrophe, he made no answer, but had risen into a sitting posture on the sofa, where he had been lying, and leaned forward with an arm on each knee, staring at the ground. He could not master his own attention for a minute together. It rushed away where it would, but it never, for an instant, lost itself in sleep. He drank a quantity of wine after dinner, in vain. No such artificial means would bring sleep to his eyes. His thoughts, more incoherent, dragged him more unmercifully after them, as if a wretch, condemned to such expiation, were drawn at the heels of wild horses. No oblivion, and no rest. How long he sat, drinking and brooding, and being dragged in imagination hither and thither, no one could have told less correctly than he. But he knew that he had been sitting a long time by candlelight when he started up and listened, in a sudden terror. For now, indeed, it was no fancy. The ground shook, the house rattled, the fierce impetuous rush was in the air. He felt it come up and go darting by, and even when he had hurried to the window and saw what it was, he stood, shrinking from it, as if it were not safe to look. A curse upon the fiery devil, thundering along so smoothly, tracked through the distant valley by a glare of light and lurid smoke, and gone. He felt as if he had been plucked out of its path, and saved from being torn asunder. It made him shrink and shudder even now, when its faintest hum was hushed, and when the lines of iron road he could trace in the moonlight, running to a point, were as empty and as silent as a desert. Unable to rest, and irresistibly attracted, or he thought so, to this road, he went out, and lounged on the brink of it, marking the way the train had gone, by the yet smoking cinders that were lying in its track. After a lounge of some half hour in the direction by which it had disappeared, he turned and walked the other way, still keeping to the brink of the road past the inn garden, and a long way down, looking curiously at the bridges, signals, lamps, and wondering when another devil would come by. A trembling of the ground, and quick vibration in his ears, a distant shriek, a dull light advancing, quickly changed to two red eyes, and a fierce fire, dropping glowing coals, an irresistible bearing on of a great roaring and dilating mass. A high wind, and a rattle another come and gone, and he holding to a gate, as if to save himself. He waited for another, and for another. He walked back to his former point, and back again to that, and still, through the wearisome vision of his journey, looked for these approaching monsters. He loitered about the station, waiting until one should stay to call there. And when one did, and was detached for water, he stood parallel with it, watching its heavy wheels and brazen front, and thinking what a cruel power and might it had. Ugh! To see the great wheels slowly turning, and to think of being run down and crushed. Disordered with wine and want of rest, that want which nothing, although he was so weary, would appease, these ideas and objects assumed a diseased importance in his thoughts. When he went back to his room, which was not until near midnight, they still haunted him, and he sat listening for the coming of another. So in his bed, whither he repaired with no hope of sleep, he still lay listening, and when he felt the trembling and vibration, got up and went to the window, to watch as he could from its position, the dull light changing to the two red eyes, and the fierce fire dropping glowing coals, and the rush of the giant as it fled past, and the track of glare and smoke along the valley. Sandy would glance in the direction by which he intended to depart at sunrise, as there was no rest for him there, and would lie down again, to be troubled by the vision of his journey, and the old monotony of bells and wheels and horses' feet, until another came. This lasted all night. So far from resuming the mastery of himself, he seemed, if possible, to lose it more and more, as the night crept on. When the dawn appeared, he was still tormented with thinking, still postponing thought until he should be in a better state. The past, present, and future all floated confusedly before him, and he had lost all power of looking steadily at any one of them. At what time, apostrophe he asked the man who had waited on him overnight, now entering with a candle, do I leave here, did you say? ? About a quarter after four, sir. Express comes through at four, sir. It don't stop. He passed his hand across his throbbing head, and looked at his watch. Nearly half past three. Nobody going with you, sir, probably, ? Observed the man. Two gentlemen here, sir, but they're waiting for the train to London. ? I thought you said there was nobody here, ? Said Carker, turning upon him with the ghost of his old smile, when he was angry or suspicious. Not then, sir. Two gentlemen came in the night by the short train that stops here, sir. Warm water, sir? ? No. And take away the candle. There's day enough for me. ? Having thrown himself upon the bed, half dressed, he was at the window as the man left the room. The cold light of morning had succeeded to night, and there was already, in the sky, the red suffusion of the coming sun. He bathed his head and face with water. There was no cooling influence in it for him. Hurriedly put on his clothes, paid what he owed, and went out. The air struck chill and comfortless as it breathed upon him. There was a heavy dew, and, hot as he was, it made him shiver. After a glance at the place where he had walked last night, and at the signal lights burning in the morning, and bereft of their significance, he turned to where the sun was rising, and beheld it, in its glory, as it broke upon the scene. So awful, so transcendent in its beauty, so divinely solemn. As he cast his faded eyes upon it, where it rose, tranquil and serene, unmoved by all the wrong and wickedness on which its beams had shone since the beginning of the world, who shall say that some weak sense of virtue upon earth, and its in heaven, did not manifest itself, even to him? If ever he remembered sister or brother with a touch of tenderness and remorse, who shall say it was not then? He needed some such touch then. Death was on him. He was marked off the living world, and going down into his grave. He paid the money for his journey to the country place he had thought of, and was walking to and fro, alone, looking along the lines of iron, across the valley in one direction, and towards a dark bridge near at hand in the other, when, turning in his walk, where it was bounded by one end of the wooden stage on which he paced up and down, he saw the man from whom he had fled, emerging from the door by which he himself had entered, and their eyes met. In the quick unsteadiness of the surprise, he staggered, and slipped onto the road below him. But recovering his feet immediately, he stepped back a pace or two upon that road, to interpose some wider space between them, and looked at his pursuer, breathing short and quick. He heard a shout, another saw the face change from its vindictive passion to a faint sickness and terror, felt the earth tremble, knew in a moment that the rush was come, uttered a shriek, looked round, saw the red eyes, bleared and dim, in the daylight, close upon him, was beaten down, caught up, and whirled away upon the jagged mill, that spun him round and round, and struck him limb from limb, and licked his stream of life up with its fiery heat, and cast his mutilated fragments in the air. When the traveler, who had been recognized, recovered from a swoon, he saw them bringing from a distance something covered, that lay heavy and still, upon a board, between four men, and saw that others drove some dogs away that sniffed upon the road, and soaked his blood up, with a train of ashes. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.